Welcome to New Books in Biography. I'm Oline Eden. Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis rarely gave interviews, and she never wrote a memoir. But the nearly 100 books that she worked with during her two decades as an editor yield fascinating insight into who she was. Today I'm going to be speaking with William Kuhn about Reading Jackie, her autobiography and books. Hi, Bill. Thank you so much for joining us for New Books in Biography. I wonder if you could just kick things off by telling us a little bit about yourself.
I started out as an academic, so I was trained as a historian. I did a PhD in history, and my field was the Victorian monarchy in Britain, and I wrote a dissertation on that subject, and ended up teaching for 15 years at a liberal college in Kenosha, Wisconsin, called Carthage. And, you know, I slowly started kind of moving away from academic writing when I wrote a kind of a biography of two Victorian courtiers called Henry and Mary Ponsonby. And that book was the first that made me see that possibly the kind of writing that I enjoyed doing was really more for a kind of a broader educated public than for academics, because academics tend to be interested in a set of more narrow, more focused academic debates. And so it was really that kind of book that kind of pushed me in the direction toward, you know, the kind of work I've been doing recently and away from academic writing.
So what drew you to Jackie exactly?
Well, the book that I had done after Henry and Mary Ponsonby was a biography of a Victorian prime minister called Benjamin Disraeli. And the kind of the standard authority on Benjamin Disraeli had written back in the 1960s, oh, well, Disraeli wrote a bunch of cheap novels, which he just used to raise money, and they're, you know, they're totally forgettable. And what we have to do to focus on the great man is to focus on his great parliamentary speeches and his life in politics. And I thought, well, hang on a second. I wonder what those novels are like. So I went to the novels that this guy called Cheap and Forgettable and just found a real wealth of information about his life. And the idea behind the book that I ended up doing on Disraeli was essentially that these books were a key to his biography that people hadn't seen before. And after I finished that book and I was kind of looking around for a new project, I came across the exhibition catalog which Hamish Bowles put together when he was doing the exhibition on Jackie's dresses at the Kennedy Library, which eventually went to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I think that would have been, I don't know exactly what the year that would have been.
It was 2003, 2004.
Okay, there. Yeah, I'm talking to a Jackie expert who has those facts at her fingertips. Thank you very much. okay, so I was looking at that exhibition catalog from 2003, 2004, and that was the first time that it seemed to me that the essays in the exhibition catalog were taking Jackie seriously as an intellect. And in particular, it seemed to me that they were looking at the clothes and the clothes that she commissioned as sort of works of art that had been designed and commissioned by somebody who's really intelligent about the history of dress. And I thought, wow, you know, maybe there's this whole dimension of Jackie that, you know, I'd never really thought of before. And then that was all the first time that I'd really come across any detailed mention of her publishing career. And I looked into that a little bit further and I thought, hey, why couldn't I do with her what I'd essentially done with Disraeli, which was a collection of books is key to a person's identity. And, you know, which is really a little bit different because he wrote these dozen novels, whereas with Jackie, she commissioned just under 100 books as an editor. But the principle is the same, that there was a kind of a thin these books and helped bring them to publication was essentially a key to her personality or a dimension of her personality that hadn't been looked at before in the biographies that had been done of her.
Right. We're obviously going to delve into that in much greater detail, but I want to start at the very beginning of reading Jackie with your author's note, because you explicitly state something that I think a lot of biographers, particularly biographers of female subjects, privately deal with, and that's the matter of the subject's name. How did you settle on calling her Jackie in your text?
Well, That has a kind of an interesting history. I think first of all, there's a kind of a sexism which has been written into biography in the past, which you just kind of referred to in your question, which is that men get referred to by their last names, and women are given an almost an immediate and instinctive diminutive. They're referred to by their first names. So a biography of President Kennedy would call him Kennedy throughout rather than Jack. And a biography of a female figure is always one in which, you know, you begin with calling her first name. And I really didn't want to kind of replicate that kind of sexism. I didn't want to go forward without challenging that. But on the other hand, it seemed to me kind of unfair to call her Mrs. Kennedy or Mrs. Onassis when that kind of would emphasize the last names of these two husbands, when in fact the publishing career and the publishing achievements were things that she did on her own, when she was not married to either one of them, and when she was, in some sense, free from the shackles of those marriages. Onassis particularly prevented her from working when they were together, and it was only with his death that she was able to explore some career options that she kind of wanted to explore even before he died. Mm-hmm. So calling her Mrs. Onassis or Mrs. Kennedy didn't seem right either, because she's got a lot of, you know, cultural recognition just there with her first name. But I wanted to put that author's note there to say that I was aware of a kind of inherent sexism in the writing of biography.
I really appreciate it. As someone who's read a lot of biographies about her, that I'd never seen that done before, and it caught my attention right away, and I thought it was an excellent step forward in many respects.
Well, it's interesting because there's a further dimension to this, which is that I met Jackie's friend, Nancy Tuckerman, mm-hmm. through the contact that I had at Doubleday, because Doubleday had commissioned this biography, so I had through them some introductions to some people in Jackie's world that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And Nancy Tuckerman has not cooperated with a lot of biographers before, so it was a real treat to be able to talk to her about Jackie. And she read my first draft, and one of the things she was angry about was the fact that I hadn't referred to her as Mrs. Kennedy. So I had to have this sort of conversation with her on the telephone. And I said, you know, I've agonized about this, Nancy, but I just don't think Mrs. Kennedy is right for a publishing career that took place after she was already Mrs. Onassis and that she was doing on her own. And so it was Nan Talese, the editor of my book and a great, you know, power in the publishing world, who said, well, why didn't you put that author's note up front about, you know, about the issues that you've been dealing with? So I really have to give credit both to Nancy Tuckerman and Nan Talese for that author's note as well.
Well, you've hit upon my next question, which was that you were able to conduct interviews with a lot of Jackie's intimates, like Nancy Tuckerman, people who don't really give interviews about her. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about the sources that you had for the book?
Well, mostly the sources were her authors and people, her authors who are still alive, and people who worked with her at Doubleday when she was there. I don't think I had anybody from the Viking period, but I mean, I had some introductions to the Doubleday people simply because my book was commissioned by Doubleday. So Steve Rubin, who was president of the company when she was there, Bill Berry, who was pretty high up in the company when she was there, a number of other people who she worked with were important sources for me. And then I talked to a lot of people who were actually her authors and who could talk to me about the process of working on a book with Jackie and what that was like. And then, you know, I think partly because I had some academic training, and as a historian, you're kind of trained to pay a lot of attention to text and, you know, to what can be learned from the written word as a kind of a relic or an artifact of the past. I really wanted to try and take the book seriously, so I read the book. And I tried to make the books be as eloquent as they could be, too, about what she was like and what she was interested in.
What kind of editor was Jackie?
Well, I think she evolved over time. I think that in the early part of her career, she was oftentimes an observer of the process rather than somebody who was involved in the day-to-day production of the book. In other words, toward the beginning of her career, she was oftentimes using her connections with interesting people in the outside world to bring a book to a publishing house that would be edited more on a kind of a more kind of day-to-day basis or edited in a more detailed way by other editors. But as she became more experienced, she was doing a lot of that in-line editing herself. I don't think she did that on every one of her books, but as she grew in confidence and as she was commissioning a broader range of books, you definitely sort of see a kind of a more detailed involvement with her, on a line-by-line basis, sometimes going through and challenging passages, asking for rewrites, telling authors what they've submitted isn't good enough and they've got to give it another try. So I would say early on, she was a hands-off editor who was kind of learning the job, and then later on, she was very hands-on. She was very much involved, and people like, especially her younger authors, I mean, especially the people who were beneath her in age, I think really felt that she was deeply involved in what they were doing. So both David Sten and Elizabeth Crook, for example, recall getting their manuscripts back from her with her handwriting on every page, saying, delete this, this is trite, I'm tired of this image, that kind of thing. So they, as kind of young authors, really felt kind of a double blow from her. In other words, here was Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis writing on their manuscript, but here was also an editor who was telling them they had to redo stuff. So I think that you can see from their perspective why that would have been a memorable experience to receive that manuscript back in the mail.
You mentioned that Jackie was a really good writer, but didn't feel that she had the talent to be a writer. How do you think that affected her as an editor?
That's a good question. I don't know why she didn't have more confidence in her own writing, because when you read some of the short fugitive pieces that she wrote for The New Yorker or introductions for Diana Vreeland exhibitions at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you can see that you're in the presence of a talented person who knows how to play around with language and make it fun to read and who clearly has some talent. That's also pretty abundantly clear, even from just like the simplest thank you note that she wrote. When people pull out these things that they got, and you know, a lot of people have got letters of hers because of who she was. They kept them, and they would sometimes show me these letters, and she just had a way with words. So I don't know why she didn't take that further herself. But I think that her own talent as a writer made her alive to the talent of other writers. I think, you know, when you yourself sense that you're pretty good at something, then you pay close attention to other people who could do the same thing. Yeah. I mean, maybe if you're a good, you know, deep sea fisherman, you watch closely what other deep sea fishermen do. But I think her, you know, a sense of her own talent as a writer made her very sensitive to the talents of other writers. It's possible that she would have found writing too exposing. And because, you know, when you're writing things, you're exposing yourself all the time. And she was clearly a person who, even before the paparazzi got interested in her, she was clearly a person who really deeply guarded her privacy. And I think that would have been a real, you know, conflict for her as a writer, because I think it probably would have been hard for her to expose herself for publication over and over again in a way that a writer has to do.
You call her a book geisha, which I love. But can you explain why you apply that to her? How do you think it's applicable?
Well, I think she had a talent for just making other writers feel wonderful about themselves. And a lot of her authors described the experience of being with her as one where they were completely at ease, and she could somehow bring themselves out of themselves and to talk about what they wanted to achieve, what they wanted to do in the book, what their ambition was for a book. And I think that's really what a geisha does. A geisha is sort of someone who's highly skilled in making someone relax and making them feel good about themselves. And sometimes other women would be kind of catty about this, and they would say, oh, she was always kind of looking at men, you know, with her those wide eyes, and she would say, oh, you're so brilliant, please go on and tell me some more. But I think she was able to do this both with men and with women, and that she was able to get people's minds off her own celebrity and to dwell instead on what their gift was that she wanted to bring out in a book. And I think that therein lay her brilliance as an editor.
So let's talk about the books a bit. Now that you mentioned that you read all of them, I want to know which one was your favorite.
Well, there were some discoveries. I really liked The Power of Myth. And I liked The Power of Myth partly because, you know, I had some background in anthropology as an undergraduate myself, and so Joseph Campbell talking about the history of culture was of interest to me. But I also just thought the whole concept of that book, which is talking about the way in which myth plays a role in everyone's lives, and that you don't have to be kind of conventionally religious or a believer in shamans or anything like that to have sort of a mythological figure play a role in your life. There's this kind of everyday quality of myth is a kind of an interesting concept. And I think it also shows her consciousness that her own mythology, her own celebrity, the aura of a kind of sacredness around her was something that she was aware of. And that's why she was so anxious to get Bill Moyers and Joseph Campbell between hardcovers when they started talking in these PBS interviews about this very subject, about how myth plays a role in everyone's everyday life. There's also kind of a wonderful passage in that book where Bill Moyers, longtime committed journalist and somebody who had worked in the Kennedy administration and also under LBJ, who essentially interviewed Campbell, who was kind of a sage in some ways. I mean, he's a kind of a popularizer of the history of religions and scholarly ideas in the history of religions to a kind of a broader public. And in the conversations between Campbell and Moyers, Moyers said, "Well, you know, you talk about myth as if it's very accessible, but I think most people think of myth as believed in by the Trobriand Islanders or ancient Greek people or committed Christians. Can you ever tell me of an example of seeing myth created?" And Campbell said, "Yes, at John F. Kennedy's funeral, when Jacqueline Kennedy stood up and led the country through that weekend of grief after the kind of the shock of the assassination. That is an example of a woman being transformed into a goddess." And I looked at that with just sort of a sense of shock, because she commissioned the book that you know, this conversation was taking place in. And it may not be in exactly those terms, but clearly she was aware of the fact that they were discussing things of which she had personal experience. And I don't think that means that, you know, she got up in the morning and sort of looked herself in the mirror and sort of said, "Hey, I'm a goddess." But, I mean, I think that means that she was aware that she had gone unwillingly and involuntarily through a process which must have been hair-raising for her, but which later on, after the fact, many decades later, a kind of a committed historian of religion could sort of say, this is a phenomenon where we see myth being created. And I think that, in some ways, that must have fascinated her. And I think that book is a commentary on her life. And that's one of the kind of great things about reading through these books, which is to find these episodes in her life kind of commented on in these books.
It's only just occurred to me, but do you think that awareness of the importance of myth in some ways explains the inclusions of the photograph of Marilyn Monroe in Allure and the photograph of Maria Callas in the other Vreeland book?
Totally. I mean, I agree with you 100% on those, because in many ways, in Allure, Diana Vreeland, who is coming at the same subject but from a different angle, mm-hmm. which is a kind of mythological female beauty. We have these notions of these images of these women, which are larger than just the women themselves in that book. And she's trying to explore what have those images got that compel us. What is it that gives us a kind of an almost a religious freestyle when we look at a Marilyn Monroe picture or a Maria Callas picture or course, some of the other images which are in that book, which are kind of less household names, but of, you know, kind of famous models being photographed by famous photographers. And I do think Jackie was able to separate herself from her history with those women and to acknowledge, along with Diana Reland, Marilyn Monroe is, and her pictures are some of the unforgettable images of the 20th century. And whatever connection that she had with my one-time husband is almost irrelevant to a consideration of the power that still remains in those images. And I think that's why she, as editor, didn't flinch when Diana Reland submitted those for her, the book. One of my funniest finds was I was looking at Diana Reland's papers in the New York Public Library, and there's a note from Reland to Jackie sort of saying, you know, I'm going to be going around trying to get pictures out of some of the most famous photographers in the world, and they're going to be asking me, you know, outrageous sums for these pictures for the book, and I really think I need a letter of introduction from you to tell them what I'm doing. And the fact is that in fashion, Diana Reland was a bigger name even then than Anna Wintour is today. Everybody knew who she was. She needed no introduction whatsoever. And she's going to her editor, Jackie Onassis, and sort of saying, okay, I need a letter of introduction to you so that I can, you know, tell Lord Snowden that I want some of his pictures. Well, Lord Snowden knows all these people already. But, you know, nevertheless, Jackie dutifully wrote out a letter to whom it may concern. This is Diana Reland, whom I've commissioned a book to write a book on, you know, compelling images from fashion photography. And then she goes on and says, and she will be including not only pictures from Vogue, but the work of the paparazzi. And I hope you'll give her all help in doing this. You know, with all best wishes, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. And that, too, sort of seemed to me a wonderful kind of irony that here was Jackie proceeding in the courts against Ron Galella to keep him at arm's length, and yet conceding in this letter of introduction for Diana Reland that under some conditions, the work of paparazzi she considered art. She considered testamentary evidence or documentary evidence of mythological female beauty.
Let's talk about the friendship that existed between Reland and Jackie Onassis, because they really kind of, they happened upon each other at the same time, and then they kind of sustained each other at really important times of their careers.
I think you're absolutely right about that. And that is, I think that's the subject of a book right there.
Yeah.
Which would be, you know, Reland and Jackie, and what was happening to them at that stage in their lives, because a lot of the early books that Jackie did are Reland exhibitions from the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And that was a very iffy stage in Reland's career, because she'd been fired by Vogue in, I think, 71 or 72. And Jackie was one of the subscribers to a fund which was collected by Reland's friends to pay her salary over at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, because the Metropolitan Museum didn't have any money or wouldn't commit any money to having Reland as their special curator, which was the title that she had at the Costume Institute after she left Vogue. So, first of all, Jackie made it financially possible for her to go over there, and then Reland gave ideas for all these early books to Jackie when she was getting started out in her publishing career. So there was a really important symbiotic relationship there. Reland was the older woman, obviously, who had more experience, and I think Jackie really looked up to her. But, you know, Vreeland also counted on the éclat of Jackie's name and her showing up at the parties of the Costume Institute to really make the Costume Institute go after Vreeland became a special curator there. So their success was really kind of interrelated. There's also a kind of a touching thing, which I think at the end of the biography, the main biography, which has been done of Vreeland, and I've forgotten the name of it, essentially the log of the doorman in Vreeland's building when she was dying is the evidence that Jackie was the last visitor from the outside to see her alive before she died. So she was continuing to call on her even in the period right before she died. So I think the two women were close, and close at the end of Vreeland's life in the way that they never were when Jackie was in the White House. Because, you know, famously, Vreeland gave some advice to Jackie about her clothes when she first went to the White House, and there was some correspondence between them, but the real closeness came later when Jackie was in New York starting out her publishing career.
Another theme that emerged in addition to the importance of myth through the books that she published was, especially early on, there were a number of books about women who struggled against being economically dependent upon men.
Yeah.
Do you think that reflected any of Jackie's experience?
Oh, totally. I mean, I really do. I think that it had to have reflected her experience. You know, she gave so few interviews to the press in the period after the White House. She didn't talk to the press very much inside the White House, but after the White House, practically not at all. And the only two interviews that I can think of that she gave are one to Publishers Weekly, where she talked a little bit about what she was working on, and two to Gloria Steinem at Ms. Magazine. And I don't think she would have allowed her picture to be on the cover of Ms., and nor would she have allowed herself to be interviewed by Gloria Steinem if she wasn't 100% behind the kind of the politics of the magazine at that time, which was all about empowering women to go out and work on their own if they could, if they wanted to, and establish economic independence from men. It's hard, you know, kind of growing up being as conscious of the social world as we are now, to really recapture that era when it was considered, you know, almost scandalous for women to work. I mean, I was born in 1957, so and my mother was born in 28, so we would have been a year older than Jackie. And there was just no question when I was growing up that middle-class women would go out and work for a living. And I remember in the period after my brother and I started to go away to college, which would have been mid-70s, my mother decided to go back to art school and then eventually to work for an art gallery. You know, what ructions it caused in our household, and you know how angry it made my father and that kind of thing. And he was a fairly enlightened guy. So I think it's kind of hard to recapture the boldness of Jackie going out and trying to get a career of her own after Onassis died in the 70s. And when you put that side by side with her having given the interview to Ms. and her publishing a series of books in which female heroines struggle against the odds in a man's world, I think all that evidence together suggests a pretty strong feminist consciousness on Jackie's part. And everybody dwelled in the interviews with Schlesinger, which were released recently, about, you know, Jackie sort of saying, all my opinions come from my husband, and I couldn't ever do anything but what he said. I think that was very characteristic of women's views of the early 60s, and I think she had a 180-degree turn from that in the 70s when she went to work. And either she had a 180-degree turn, or people have missed the dimension of kind of irony and sarcasm and playfulness that she probably sometimes used with Schlesinger, who was an old friend, of hers. So I don't know how I'd take that, but I mean, certainly, that was not that language she used of Schlesinger about taking all her political opinions from her husband was not the last word in her life on her attitude for the relations between the sexes.
I think this came out a little bit in the Schlesinger tapes as well, but she had a bit of a naughty streak, right?
I think she did. And What people remembered about her in the office was that she was a big tease, that she would, you know, she'd find people's weak spots, and she could tease pretty hard sometimes. I'm not thinking of any examples of it off the top of my head, but I mean, there is one thing where Bill Berry, who was pretty high up manager at Doubleday, was having a conversation with the religion editor about a book which they just brought out, which had made made one of the figures in the Roman Catholic hierarchy in New York very angry, so angry that he denounced the book on the front page of the New York Times, and they were just delighted because this was free publicity for their book. And they were discussing this kind of earnestly out in the hall about whether or not they were going to get into trouble for it. And Jackie looked over her glasses at them and blew out some smoke from a cigarette she was smoking, and she said, "You two bad Catholic boys." And that was just not the image of Jackie I had in my mind, you know, saintly Jackie, before I started writing this book. And it's extremely endearing. She's the kind of person you feel like you'd like to go and have a drink with.
A lot of her books were really intended more for beauty than for profitability, it seemed like. But I think we would be remiss if we did not mention Moonwalk with Michael Jackson. Can you talk a bit about that bizarreness?
Yeah, I mean, I think that she was aware that a number of the books that she did were not going to be bestsellers. But that she, you know, when she met a kind of a retired curator of European art from the Metropolitan Museum of Art, John Pope Hennessy, and asked him to write his memoirs, that was not going to sell thousands and thousands of copies. It was the kind of thing that she was interested in, and she liked art appreciation of all sorts, but it wasn't a big commercial topic, and she did a number of books that were like that. And so I think she felt that to compensate for some of these kind of more narrow interest books that she was bringing out, she had to be of some value to the company in terms of bringing in bigger, more potentially profitable subjects. And someone came to her with the idea that they should commission a book from Michael Jackson and she should be the editor. And I don't think she loved the idea, but it was kind of a quid pro quo for her, you know, for her being a publisher. And They got along fine, but she was certainly in a kind of a difficult situation with the first draft of his book, which he submitted, which was essentially a series of press releases kind of strung together about the various music awards that he'd gotten. And she then had to go to him and said, and say, look, Michael, you and I are both going to be at the end of a lot of pretty brutal criticism if you don't kind of open up a little bit more with this book and say some things about difficult passages in your life, as well as all this kind of public relations about your awards. Everybody knows you're brilliant, but come on now, what's it like to be Black in the entertainment industry? What was it like to lose your childhood to, you know, to your career? And so she sent him back to rewrite it. And I think that it's not a heavyweight book, but I think it's probably better for her forcing him to send in a second draft. And I also think that if you read that book, there's a lot of incredibly revealing things that he puts in about himself in the book, which he may not have been intended to be as revealing as they were.
So how did the woman that you expected to find differ from the woman that you found when you were doing your research on Jackie?
I found she was a lot more like people I know, and a lot less like the distant celebrity that I expected her to be. She's more like people I know in that, she was happy sitting on a sofa with her books, and being by herself. And that dimension of her personality was not very clear before I started the book. Her shyness came through a lot more strongly to me than I'd expected it to. I don't think I knew anything about her shyness before I started with it. But people who love books are oftentimes more comfortable with books than they are with people. And I would not say that, you know, her métier was actually to be a people person. I don't think she walked easily into a crowded room and could go around talking to people. And that's not just because of the effect her celebrity had on people. I think that was true back when she was just the candidate's wife as well, that she just didn't find it easy to talk to people, and she did find it easy to be in a room with a book and to be on at her ease with pen and paper. That shyness, that slightly loner quality about her is something you find a lot in writers, in academics, in teachers sometimes. And that was just something I was surprised to find, and it made her much more approachable to me. It made her seem like it wouldn't have been so hard to sit down with her and have a discussion, and to have a discussion about a book. Whereas I think beforehand, I just assumed that we would have had nothing in common. And I haven't finished the book. I don't think that's true.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today about Reading Jackie, which is now in paperback. Any idea what you'll be writing next?
Well, I've got a novel coming out later this year called Mrs. Queen Takes the Train, which is a little comic romance about the Queen leaving Buckingham Palace one time that she doesn't have that on her schedule, and she kind of disappears, and six of her courtiers have got to go after her before the tabloids and the secret services find out that she's missing. So it was very much something inspired by Alan Bennett. Uncommon Reader, which I loved. And because I've spent some time writing the history of the monarchy and the history of Victorian courtiers, I felt like I had a kind of an inside view on some dimensions of palace life that maybe not everybody else would have. And so I tried to put that together with a little comic invented story about what might happen if the queen left the palace one day without her usual security escort. And so that's the result. I hope people like it. I mean, it was fun to write and completely different from writing the Jackie book because I didn't have to have footnotes. Yeah.
Definitely an advantage of fiction.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Listening to an interview with author William Kuhn about Reading Jackie, which is now out in paperback. I'm Olaine Eaton. This is New Books in Biography. Thanks for listening.